Hello and welcome to another episode of Wellness with Liz Earle, with me, Liz Earle. And a great topic for today as we are talking about high intensity interval training, otherwise known as HIIT, and also how eating high fat foods can help us to lose weight. Yes, they can. But first, let me introduce my guest for today, a leading personal trainer and nutritional specialist with over 20 years experience working in these very areas. She is Zana Morris, owner of three truly spectacular boutique gyms in London, specialising in HIIT, as well as the author of The High Fat Diet, How to Lose 10 Pounds in 14 Days. Zana, it's great to have you here.
It's fantastic to be here.
In my little studios. I am normally coming to visit you in your gyms and your studios. So welcome to Wellbeing.
Thank you. This is so much cozier than my gym.
Well, it's under-equipped, I should say, compared to yours, because yours are truly amazing. And we will talk about what makes those gyms quite so amazing and quite so different in just a moment. But first of all, can we kick off by saying exactly what is HIIT? What do we mean by this high intensity interval training?
High intensity interval training. We tend to call what we do high intensity weight training.
Right.
Traditionally, high intensity interval training is most people think of sprinting or using a spinning kind of bike where you go all out for anything from 30 seconds to a minute and a half, then slow down.
Right.
For about a minute or so, and then speed back up. So it's intervals as such.
Interval training.
All out,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Bursts. What we're doing with the weight training, it is high intensity training, but we're using weights. And the key is that you train each body part to its absolute maximum. With each exercise, you're doing three sets to the absolute maximum that you can do. You lighten the weight each time, but it's always with weights and it's a blitz. So from
right.
beginning to end, it's takes anything from 8 to 15 minutes, as you've discovered.
Yeah, as I have discovered, yes. You kindly invited me in to try it. And I have been on a bit of a fitness journey, I guess, over this last few years, and wanting to be fitter, and flatter, certainly in certain areas of my body, you know, in my 50s than I was in my 40s, and being quite surprised that I can actually achieve that. So I started by a bit of running. And then I'm really interested in this whole area of weight training for midlife women and building in muscle, because that's what you're all about, isn't it?
It's building muscle and balancing hormones. Most people approach exercise and fitness with the more you do, the better it is. And it's not very scientific. That works beautifully when you're 23 and you can just pelt it out. But there hits a point where you're actually looking at what are you doing internally to your body. So one is muscle, without question. The estimate as we age, I'm sure it varies from one individual to the next, but the estimate is we lose about 0.5 pound of lean body mass from the age of 30, which by the time you've hit 50,
gosh,
that's
what,
10
each year?
Pounds each year.
Wow.
Sorry, apologies. Yes,
each year.
Yeah,
half a pound a year. That's
each,
a
half
lot.
A pound a year.
So especially as we're living longer.
Well, especially, exactly.
We're going to end up with none.
Kind of. Well, if you think about it, that's why people end up stooping. The bone density goes.
Yeah.
Everything drops. Literally, it is because it's vanishing. It's a friend of mine used to describe it as leaking protein from the body. Mm. It literally is protein coming out of the bones. It's muscle loss. It's affecting organs. It's everything beginning to deplete. And exercise, the way a lot of people approach it, is more is better. Doesn't actually equate, because if you do too much training, you're eating into that muscle mass further.
Right.
So you're accelerating the loss.
Yeah.
Whereas what we're looking at is now, how can you reverse the loss and ensure, and this is the beauty of weight training and high intensity training, mm-hmm. and we're just combining the two.
So would you suggest doing the both together? So for someone like me, I mean, I'm a bit of a runner. I don't go very far and I don't go very fast, but I do a bit of running. Is that useful for kind of endurance, and or should I not bother really and just focus on the weights?
I love weights.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're running and you want to get the physical benefit of it, sprint. Do interval sprints.
Okay.
Some people run from a meditation side of it, so it's just sort of clear the mind.
Yeah, and it is a good switch off.
Exactly, and there's a benefit to that. I cannot argue to the benefit of that side of it. But if you're running from a physical side where you're thinking, right, I just want to lose a bit of fat and I want to tone up, I personally think you might be wasting your time.
It's interesting because my personal trainer, Michael Garry, who I have chatted to a lot here, he actually says very similar. He's always trying to get me to do speed work. where we're doing a little bit of gentle jogging, and he says, right, okay, from that lamppost to that lamppost over there, you know, sprint, give it all you've got.
Yes. And fitness comes from breaking your flow. And
does it?
It does. So it's the kind of stop start. So, and that's the beauty of interval sprinting. You go all out, then you slow down, you go all out, and it really gets the heart rate up, the oxygen uptake goes up. So the whole body, it affects the hormones in the body in a completely different way.
Yeah.
When you run in a flow, again, as it describes, it's beautiful from a meditative side of it, but from a fitness side, you don't get necessarily fitter. It comes from the breaking up. You stop, you start, you go uphills, downhills, you kind of go on an even ground to even ground.
Yeah.
So the more you can break it, the fitter you get.
Fantastic. You talk about heart rate there. Can we overdo it with our heart? Can we overstimulate and get too much of the heart racing?
In theory, yes. I wouldn't personally recommend people just wake up one morning having done nothing and decide, right, now I'm going to go all out. You're looking at going between 80 to 90% of your capacity. My recommendation is always, always start at less than you know you can do for at least the first three, if not six sessions, whichever form of high intensity training you're doing, whether you're doing it with weights, whether you're doing it with sprinting. Just keep it under the level until you've got your rhythm and that baseline up. A very healthy individual, if you think about it, if you were to sprint for a bus, you're expecting a normal, average, healthy individual should be able to sprint for a bus all out. That's high intensity training.
Right.
So we're not all going to keel over by suddenly doing a sprint.
Yeah, yeah.
That said, common sense with how much you're going to push yourself. The other thing is the duration. I'm always a bit cautious of high intensity sessions that last an hour. I'm not
right.
sure.
Right. So
that's...
like long spinning classes, for example.
Yeah. I think that's high intensity, but I don't know if that goes under high intensity and full style training, because ideally you shouldn't be able to do it for an hour.
Right.
If you can, you're potentially not going intense enough. You should be going much shorter.
Okay. Do it just for a short bit until you're really gasping. And what about the effect on the immune system? Because I have heard some detractors say that you need to be careful because it can lower your immune system.
I think the exact opposite.
Really?
I love, and again, this is more going at this scientifically rather than just bash the body. The whole beauty of any high intensity training is it's all in the recovery. It's all, you're giving the body this maximum recovery time. Whereas normally when people kind of do longer kind of running or kind of where they're really drawing out the sessions, the body starts eating into more muscle tissue than it's capable of recovering, which is affecting organs, which will affect hormones and immune system, full stop. Cortisol
right.
gets released, which eats into everything and affects the immune system, which in turn affects insulin and everything else. So there's a whole knock-on effect from overtraining. Whereas when you keep a short blitz, the body goes into this beautiful recovery mode after, where the blood flow is shooting into the muscle groups. Oh, that's all the nutrients getting in. It's all the toxins getting out. So if anything, I think the immune system is much stronger with high intensity.
From these short bursts.
From the short bursts.
Yeah.
Now, emphasis on the short. So again, I would, for me, short is anything from 8 up to 20 minutes. I think going beyond 20 minutes might be too much, quite frankly.
Well, this is, I have to say, total music to my ears, and I'm sure lots of our listeners as well, because I like to exercise, but I'm time poor. You know, fitting in an hour's class, getting to a gym, you know, all the caboodle, you know, that's several hours out of my day. I just don't have that.
Yeah.
Whereas I can do 8 minutes, 15 minutes. And I know in your book, which we'll talk about, The High Fat Diet, you do have a great home-based routine. You don't even have to go out, do you? You can do stuff at home.
You can do stuff at home. And I suppose what I love about all of it is I think it's more effective, not less. So you're not just cutting down on time because you don't have it. You're actually doing way more.
Getting more out of
it in less time.
And, you know, this is, we're going to really bust some myths here, because I think this is so fascinating. And what I've learned in the short time that we've known each other is that, you know, you're saying things like we're getting more out of exercise by doing less in terms of time, which is, as I say, music to my ears. But let's just talk a little bit about weight training, because as a midlife woman, conscious of bone density and losing bone strength, can we build that back in with weights?
All the research seems to imply we can. Certainly from my experience, it looks like we can with working with clients. Yes. So I'm going to say yes.
Yeah.
Weight training, I think, is fantastic. I have to be honest, going back to the 2012 Olympics, I loved those Olympics for the one huge reason. Overnight, exercise and weights, for some reason, became something that women embraced. pre that, it was always you had to call it, you kind of had to call it resistance training.
Right.
You weren't allowed to call it weight training.
There's a whole thing on Instagram now, isn't there? Women who lift.
Yes. And now it's a thing. It's brilliant. In those days, we had to soften it. We weren't able to call it weights. We weren't able to call it muscle. It had to be lean body mass. And we had to keep everything really soft. What I love about weight training is, A, you're not going to get big.
You need it's not going to bulk me up,
is it? Exactly. You need some serious testosterone and other hormones going on, and not to mention a whole nutritional plan around it to really bulk up. That takes a lot of work. It really does.
Right. So we don't have to worry about that,
getting
bulky.
You really, really don't have to worry about that at all. If anything, it's the total opposite. I mean, muscle, a pound of muscle is much smaller than a pound of fat. So if you lose fat and put on muscle, you are smaller. And to me, it's almost like a really tight skin. It like pulls everything. It's like wearing tight leggings. They pull, they suck you in. Muscle will suck you in. It makes you smaller, not bigger.
And building muscle also boosts the metabolism, doesn't it? So we can, it speeds it all up.
It's fantastic. Yes.
So we're burning calories more efficiently.
Apparently between 50 to 100 calories is burnt by each pound of muscle that we have. So if you gain just 3 pounds of muscle, you're burning between 150 to 300 calories extra every day.
Wow.
Doing nothing.
Your body is doing it for you, being more efficient.
Because when you're sleeping, muscle's twitching. It's always moving. It's doing something.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is quite cool. Yes, it's very cool.
Now, but, go on.
Oh, I was just going to add one thing, though. When you're looking at muscle, you really are talking about lean body mass, to go back to that. But you're also talking about organs, which affect your hormones. And that's a huge thing when we hit our 40s into our 50s and onwards. It's how we can keep them as balanced as we can. And if we're losing muscle and if we're exercising in a way that drops it even further, we are affecting the very organs that then produce the hormones.
Right.
So it's a knock-on effect that most people just never think about.
Yeah.
So gaining muscle really just means you're pushing protein back into your body, which goes back to pushing protein back into your bones, mm-hmm. which is what tags to the calcium and makes it nice and solid. Mm. So all you're doing, when we measure the body, the lean body mass, it's like basically the body fat percentage, you're looking at the muscle versus fat. When we see a muscle gain, it's indicative of what else is happening in terms of the bones potentially soaking up the protein, the organs potentially soaking up the protein. And then obviously even collagen in skin goes under that bracket.
Yeah, so. And just having better hormone health.
Yes.
Better health all round, better resistance. For
everything is functioning.
Aging and...
Yeah, everything's functioning more like it did when you were in your 20s.
God, it was.
You don't want to lose it.
Just fabulous. Now, you mentioned the magic word calorie just then, because when I first came to see you to talk about HIIT training,
yes,
I wasn't really expecting to suddenly find myself plunged into the world of high-fat diets and ketosis and low carbs and all of that, which, you know, as you know, I've written about for a long time. My first book was about oils and fats, vital oils, back in the day when you and I were first starting. So you put me on a high fat diet, which I was quite surprised by, but I've read about going into ketosis. So for those listening who may not have heard of this, it's basically I was eating just high fat and protein, a little bit of green veg or white veg, which are very low in carbs, but absolutely no sugars.
Yeah.
I mean, you took me off wine, you took me off all sorts, all the things that I really enjoy. But you did actually, one saving grace, you said I could have a bit of vodka with some sparkling water and lemon juice, which I did do. And I actually got quite a taste for that. But interestingly, you said only have that after you've eaten something.
So preferably, yes.
When you've lined your stomach with some healthy fat or whatever. Anyway, the upshot, dear listener, is that I was eating high fat meat. I was eating, you know, mackerel and lots of eggs. I was making omelets and adding in extra egg yolks, lots of hard cheese. I was only allowed double cream in my coffee. I got such a taste for that, I have to say. That was a bit dangerous.
Delicious.
It was really delicious. And I lost weight. I mean, I was really extraordinarily surprised. And not only that, but I had my blood fats tested and my cholesterol went down. So, and I am going to write about this more at length in the magazine, because it is completely fascinating. And I think I've only touched on my own personal journey here, because I think there's a lot more that's going on here. But how is that working? How do you explain to people that if they want to lose fat, they have to eat more fat?
There's a balance. So to lose fat, you eat more fat, but you do need to get the sugars out. So there's two ways of looking at this. The first is very simply if you consider pouring oil onto open flame, like if your frying pan goes on fire and if you put more oil on it, it would just flare up. Literally in ketosis, your body switches from burning sugars as it would normally be doing into burning fats as the fuel. And once it starts burning fats, it eats into your own fat stores, energy levels go up. And the energy levels go up. This is what I love about it. And it's so obvious, but it's an obvious fact that I miss, most people miss. A gram of fat has 9 calories, which is pure energy. We always think of it, no, that's fat you're going to put on. Everyone looks at calories like it's a thing that you shouldn't have. Without calories, we wouldn't get out of bed. It's literally like it's energy. That's what it means. So 9 calories as opposed to the 4 calories you get in your gram of sugar. So suddenly you're literally getting double the fuel once your body is burning that. So the first is your body goes beautifully into burning fat as a fuel, which means it drives into your fat stores really fast, which is fantastic. The second is the whole insulin game. Calories are not all calories are equal. And back to why I said have your glass of vodka. The vodka itself, actually, I'm saying this cautiously. When it comes to shape and insulin, alcohol is not the issue. It's the sugar in the drink of the alcohol.
Okay.
So you've got your glass of wine, which is it's really just grape juice.
Fermented grape juice.
Exactly.
It's got a lot of sugar in it.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas once you get to vodka, it's a bit more pure in the alcoholic sense and less of the kind of sugars in it. But there's still a little. And a gram of sugar on an empty stomach hits the bloodstream really fast. Insulin goes up. And once the insulin goes up, you've got that whole signaling now going on. Ghrelin gets affected. So suddenly the body is ultimately going to be storing fat as a fuel nicely round your stomach usually. And then this ghrelin jumps in afterwards and makes you crave and get hungry. So now you need it again in another 2 hours and you're on that cycle. Whereas if you hide it behind the food, so you have it after the meal or during, the rest of the food, particularly if you're on a high fat plan, the fats in particular slow down that sugar hit. So it hits the stomach, but it can't go very far very fast because all this fat is around it. So it doesn't really hit the bloodstream very quickly. It's like a very slow drip feed. So the insulin stays steady where you want it. The high fat plan is really an ultra low GI plan. The aim is not just to get the insulin in a nice steady wave, it's to get it as close to flat line as we can get it, which then completely has it. The whole body's then hormonal reaction changes. It's the fastest way I know to stop cravings. It's the absolute fastest way I know to stop cravings.
I found it quite interesting the first couple of days. I think I was probably getting rid of all the carbs in my system and the sugars, and my body was, I don't know whether it was physically my body or whether it was my brain that was taking over saying, hold on a minute, you know, where is all this stuff that I'm used to eating? And I didn't feel hungry at all. Yeah. I mean, I actually wasn't probably eating a huge amount. I mean, I had to kind of actually, I was eating 2 meals a day. So I did that whole thing of partly intermittent fasting as well. So I'd have a brunch at around 11, 12 o'clock and then eat again in the evening. But I actually really wasn't hungry. And your diet plan is very good because you've got measurements. So you measure the amount of protein, the amount of fat that you have.
Yeah.
And then I'd bulk it up with some extra sort of green leafy veg, that kind of thing. Yeah. But I remember, you know, thinking, God, I hadn't had enough fat today, according to the, you know, what am I going to do? So I would just go to the fridge and eat spoonfuls of double cream. And I think this is, you know, so totally not what I have ever done in my whole life.
It's very
and yet I felt amazing.
Yes.
And I lost pounds.
Yes.
Had more energy.
Yes.
And my blood fats were going down as tested by my lipids in my blood. So it was really an extraordinary experiment, and I'm still slightly reeling from it, as you can probably tell by the tone of my voice.
Yes, yeah.
So alongside that, you are very much a believer in certain types of supplements, because you've given me various things to take during the course of that with the weight training. So talk us through what you would recommend in that sort of situation.
Well, we're looking at this. We combine the high fat with the high intensity training because the combination is quite interesting. The high fat, and I'm about to go on to the supplements, apologies, but I'm going to backtrack a little, because the high fat flatlines the insulin for us, and high intensity training causes this beautiful growth hormone release, which is what helps push the protein back into everything, build the muscle, seems to target belly fat. We combine them both to kind of get that maximum impact, if you like. Now, the supplements come in. By the way, sorry, just to clarify that, if insulin is high in the body can't release this growth hormone. They seem to be one or the other living
there. And that's
there.
A very interesting thing, because obviously growth hormone is what is going to keep us younger for longer.
Yes.
And help with our immunity.
Yes.
And it's also linked to telomeres.
Yes.
Isn't it? So
yes.
This is, for those of you listening that perhaps haven't come across this expression, the telomeres, as I understand it, are the little kind of cappings of chromosomes, which shorten with age. And yep. Also shortened telomeres are linked to a lot of acute disease like cancer, and also longer term degenerative disease. But high intensity interval training lengthens telomeres.
Yeah.
So this is another benefit
it's
of
another
doing
benefit
those extreme
of
forms of intensive short bursts of exercise, is lengthening telomeres.
Yeah. It's a huge part of it. And insulin seems to prevent the body releasing growth hormone.
Right.
So hence the low GI plans, generally speaking, are brilliant.
Well, there's so much on the internet now. If you look up keto,
so
K-E-T-O, keto or ketogenesis, it is extraordinary how it's being linked, obviously, to reversing type 2 diabetes.
Yes.
I mean, people are posting about cancer treatments. It's, you know, there's an awful lot out there. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about it, actually, more becomes understood, perhaps.
I believe we will. I think it's only just started all the real research on it. It's going to be interesting.
Really interesting. Yeah. So let's go on to now to the supplements.
The supplements, because
you had me, for example, putting spoonfuls of creatine powder into my coffee
cream. The supplements we're recommending are because you're doing training as well.
Right.
With the training, the key all the time is it's almost like there's only one rule: do not lose muscle. And that's almost underlies our whole principle with everything. Don't let clients lose muscle. So many restrictive diets cause muscle loss. And quite frankly, apparently some of the research shows that even a high fat diet, if people just go on it on its own, up to 45% of the weight that's lost can be muscle loss.
Right.
A low fat, that can be 65%. A low calorie, that can go up to 90%.
Wow.
Which is wow. You lose 10 pounds and 9 pounds as muscle, only 1 pound as fat.
You seriously don't want to do that.
You really, really don't want to go there. You don't. So the supplements we're recommending are tying in because we want to make sure the muscle is recovering as quickly as possible. Creatine is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Creatine is a lovely, interesting little supplement. It's part of a protein. You get it in things like mackerel and beef. It does mean that vegetarians and particularly vegans can be low on it. And it is the primary source that our body uses in the initial stage of explosive exercise. So if somebody is suddenly sprinting up the stairs or suddenly sprinting for the bus, it's creatine that's getting us there. It's the oxygen cycle only kicks in after that. And if you think about it, every time, anytime you do a quick sprint, you go out of breath after you do the sprint, and then you're out of breath, if you like. And that's when the oxygen cycle kicks in for the energy. It's creatine that gets us from in the initial kickoff with it. With high intensity training, every time you train, your body's going to use up its stores and you need to then replenish it. And you can do that through the diet, but you need to wade your way through a lot of mackerel and beef to get it quickly as such.
Right.
And we're looking to get the fastest possible results in the shortest possible time. So the creatine, it makes quite a bit of difference in terms of stamina, recovery with the training, really being able to go for it. Indirectly, I think it helps the fat burning, but I think that's more because you train with a lot more intensity from the get-go, than if you didn't supplement with it, quite frankly.
Right.
Other supplements we recommend, one is a free-form amino acid blend. Building Blocks is our brand of it. It's a pharmaceutical-grade free-form amino acids.
And what does that do?
It is purely protein in the purest form you can get. Each one is just a gram of protein. It's the full spectrum of amino acids. Your body absorbs it within about half an hour.
So it's a complete protein
in a pill.
And could a vegan or a vegetarian take that?
Yes. Okay. And it's brilliant for vegans and vegetarians.
Yeah.
In fact, it used to amuse me when you give it to... Now, some vegans and vegetarians have their nutrition beautifully carved out to get the right amount of protein and balance. But many don't have it quite as precise. And taking that, even if they weren't exercising, they feel a difference in their muscle tone after 2 or 3 weeks. Because again, we don't build muscle for exercise. We build muscle in the recovery after exercise.
Is that the fact? So exercise is not what's building the muscle?
It's sort of breaking it down. And then the body goes into recovery. And in the recovery, it soaks up all the protein and nutrients.
Right. So when you recover from the exercise, you need to have good protein and amino acids in your system to build that muscle.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
exactly.
What are you going to build it from?
Exactly. If you on just a diet of nothing but, say, sugars and there was no protein in there, it doesn't matter how much exercise you'll do, you'll get soft.
Okay. Well, that is very interesting. I can think of a couple of people in my family who I might have to relay that message to, because I think so many of us, and I've been guilty of this in the past, you know, we'll go for a good run or go for a good workout, and then you kind of, you know, quote, reward yourself with a muffin or whatever it is. And that's not what we should be doing.
It's not. And that's the other thing I love about the short high intensity training. You don't get that sense afterwards of, oh my God, I
you're not exhausted.
No, exactly. Exactly.
I'm amazed. I mean, I lift the heaviest weights I've ever lifted in my life, and yet my heart does not feel overstretched. I'm not exhausted. I'm not panting. I haven't even broken a sweat, frankly. I mean, I don't know whether I should be, whether I shouldn't be telling you that. You think I'm not working hard enough. It is hard at the time. But I think because you're only doing, or certainly at my stage, I'm doing 6 or 8 repetitions at a time. I'm kind of counting them down. And even though it's really hard, I'm thinking, I've only got 3 more, you know, 2 more, 1 more. And you kind of think, you talk yourself through it. You can do it.
Yeah.
But I'm not wrung out. I'm not like a wet rag at the end.
Yeah. And that's the key. It's that, particularly with the weight training, when we're doing it, you're targeting each muscle group and recruiting as much of the muscle fibre as you can within each muscle. So it's very focused. Often with high intensity training, it's quite generic. So you're sprinting. So you're using a lot of muscle groups, but you're not quite getting into each one to the full depth. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of doing it the weights is you can really target the muscle one at a time, which allows you to sculpt as well. So just from a shape and beauty point of view, you can sculpt the body if you like.
Yeah, nice. And I like the way that at the end of every weight session, we have to do abs.
Yes.
So there's a little ab set, little floor routine, no weights, just some crunches and some leg raises and stuff to get the abs carved
really properly,
into shape.
Yes, really, really carve them. Although the best exercise for abs, and people really don't like hearing this, the best exercise for abs is actually squats.
Because is it?
Yeah.
How it's come? I thought that was just good for your bum.
It's good for everything. Traditionally, it was always called the king of all exercise because it works your bum, it works your thighs. They're the biggest muscle group, the quads and the hamstrings, the biggest muscle groups. It works your entire body. But from the abs point of view, you really have to stabilize using your core, your abdominals. Right. And it has probably the biggest impact on that growth hormone release, which really targets belly fat.
Does it?
Yes.
Specifically belly fat.
Specifically
how amazing
belly fat,
is that?
Which is quite cool.
So as we get this kind of midlife spread, middle-age spread, that's what we should be doing, squats, which is great because you can do it wherever you are.
You can.
You can just do it at home. You could do it, you know, if you're traveling, if you're staying with friends, you've got no equipment, doesn't matter.
It's
you're just
all-round.
Using your body weight just to squat up and down, literally. Yeah.
It's a brilliant exercise.
Just before we move on from the supplements, I just wanted to pick up on another supplement that you threw into the mix for me recently, and that was vitamin B5.
Yes.
The chill pill.
It's probably my favourite.
Do you know,
yes.
This is interesting because when I've been, this is, you know, dear listener, when I was particularly stressed, I think I was probably sat in your office looking a bit harassed one day and you said, oh, I think you need a chill pill. And I would normally go for something like B12 for stress. And the kind of whole B vitamins, but you single out B5. Why is that?
B5, so pantothenic acid or calcium pantothenic, depending on which kind of form, is incredibly effective for nourishing the adrenal glands specifically. Now, it has multiple functions and does multiple things within the body. But one of the biggest things it does is support the adrenal glands. And they are, as most people in this day and age know, what help protect your body from stress. If they get worn down, it affects, again, most people know this at this stage, but it does. It can affect mood, it can affect energy, it can affect sleep, and you get all the stress-related things kind of knocking on. And the B5 just seems to have this incredible impact and a fast impact, usually within 2 to 3 days, people will notice it, on getting the adrenals back up and functioning the way they're supposed to. It's quite dramatic, more so than any other B vitamin. And I used to run health stores years ago. And there was always a choice in those days. Now we don't sell it on shelves anymore, to the best of my knowledge. Certainly in Ireland, they took it off. I'm pretty sure it's off the shelves here. St. John's Wort was its competitor in those days. You had St. John's Wort and B5. And honestly, to me, there was no comparison. And the B5, you felt a difference within days. It just normalised sleep patterns.
Yeah.
And we used to call it the happy vitamin.
I have to say, maybe it's coincidence, but I do feel happier taking B5.
Yeah, I believe it. I honestly do smile, certainly in central London. I think
you want to get everyone on it.
You've no idea. Out of all the supplements that we have, and we've ones that help fat burning, and we've one that helps, you know, skin, the B5 sort of, I think, is a top seller.
Yeah, interesting. You want to go out in the spritz and kind of, you know, distribute it to everybody. So over to B5.
Yeah.
Now, I am about to embark on a different phase of my eating plan with you now, because you are now switching me from the high fat, low or almost zero carb to low fat, low carb. So how is that going to work? And why do you switch between the high fat and the low fat?
I love the high fat. I really do. And the benefits, and you only have to go online at this stage to know the benefits of fat and a keto style diet. They are endless. The downside of a high fat is it doesn't work well with sugars, in my experience. And the downside of living in London, I love living in London, I love living in the UK, but there's a downside, which is we have lots of options and great social lives. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm. So it can be a bit more challenging to completely eliminate the sugars.
And you're right, because it is, keto is an on-off switch. Isn't it? You're either in keto or you're out.
Yes.
And you can do all this amazing work where you're just having your avocados and your macadamia nuts and your double cream and whatever. And that's all going really well. And then you have the tiniest piece of birthday cake or a few sips of wine and you've blown it.
You certainly can. You need to get back on it really fast because it is much more like an on-off switch.
And then you're going to put all that weight on and more some potentially.
If you keep going. Yes. Yeah. In my experience, you get away with probably one cheat a week.
Do you?
If you go into two cheats a week, you're going to very much pause. And if you're on to three, particularly for more ladies than men, in my experience, once you go into 3 or 3 days of cheating, you're potentially going the opposite way.
Right.
It can be the fastest way to gain weight if you mix it all up, because you're just on a mega calorie plan then.
Yeah, you're just eating huge amounts of fat and some sugar.
And some sugar. You're just eating a lot. So, yeah.
Okay, so that is a word of warning.
Yes, so you do need to watch for that. Whereas the advantage of still keeping the carbs low, so it's not out, but keeping them low. So you're still on a low insulin producing plan as such. I'm still keeping to very natural type foods, but keeping the fat low means it's much more forgiving and you will still lose if you're looking to lose.
So what would an average sort of meal plan look like? What would you be eating?
You're looking at breakfast, things like, and you are going towards more lower fat, natural yogurts, eggs are fine. In a very strict version, we would say egg whites. Personally, I don't believe in taking the fat out completely. I think a little bit of fat in there keeps us sane.
Yeah.
So full eggs are fine. Greens are in. All vegetables are in. So unlike the high fat, where you're really focusing on the greens and the whites, you now can have any coloured vegetable you like.
And that's because things like red veg, like red peppers, for example, have more sugar in them.
Yes, they have more sugar. You get away with that on a lower fat, but on a higher fat, it doesn't work quite so well.
Okay. So all veg are in.
All veg are in.
Fat, low carb.
If you're, so particularly if they're raw, any vegetable you like, if it's raw, if it's cooked, it's better if it's green.
Right.
But a cooked carrot will not blow the plan.
Okay. But it does release a lot of sugar, doesn't it? Cooked carrots.
It does.
And cooked tomatoes.
And the more you cook and the more you process it, the more up the scale it goes, sadly.
Okay,
so, yes. Yeah. There's pros and cons to everything in life.
Mm-hmm.
And cooked tomatoes have benefits that raw tomatoes don't have,
right,
as most of us know. From an insulin point of view and a shape point of view, the more we cook it, the more we're releasing the sugars.
Okay. And then presumably no carbs, no pasta, no potatoes, no rice.
Pasta, rice, all of those are still out.
Okay.
Now, the beauty of this plan, though, is most of our clients will do it strictly maybe 5 days a week.
Mm.
And then they'll relax on the weekend and they will still chip away.
Okay.
And keep getting
you haven't
into
blown
better
it
shape.
Like coming
exactly,
out of keto.
Exactly. So it means for some, for example, they may have kids that on the weekend they don't want to be trying to figure out strict diets. They can just relax and go with the flow a little bit.
Mm.
Or they may have events on. They can just relax a little bit. And then Monday to Friday, it's very easy just to head down and kind of get into a rhythm.
Yeah. And interestingly, also, you say to me that I may have to eat more often. So
yes.
Rather than the 2 meal a day thing, you're actually looking at perhaps 4, and you've introduced a kind of a high protein tea, is that right?
Well, the plan is there's not a high protein kind of evening.
Sort of at 4 o'clock.
Yes, exactly. I smile, coming from Ireland, tea and dinner, we're always kind of
okay, sorry.
Which one's which. I'm still figuring
tea
it
time.
out.
Yeah. So tea time, I'm not allowed cake, but I am allowed
but
a pot
of
cottage cheese.
You are allowed a pot of cottage cheese. The downside of losing the fat is everything digests so much more quickly. And once we take the fat out, you will get hungrier. And there's no point pretending you won't. You will. So you are better off just assuming at about 4 o'clock, be prepared, have something. Even if you almost think you won't need it, have it. Because otherwise, right, come 6 o'clock, you will be eating the arm off the person sitting beside you on the way home.
Do you know, I did notice when I was on high fat, I wasn't hungry.
Yeah.
I literally wasn't hungry at all. And now moving into low fat, you're right. And the fat does have the, I never had to pronounce it, the satiety,
yes,
factor that, yes, keeps us feeling fuller for longer. And you really see that.
It really does. And it has a lovely stabilizing effect on the body. It's great for mood as well. I mean, yeah, the fat is brilliant. So once you move to a lower fat, higher protein plant, you do need to get the protein in. Because we're taking most of the fat out. There's just a very little bit left. Mm-hmm. The carbs are still incredibly low. If you do not get enough protein in, again, you will eat the arm of the person sitting beside, right, you. So it is a high protein plan once you're into this.
And there's the option there of having protein shakes.
Yes. They can be really helpful.
Can they?
They really can. On a high fat, I'm a bit nonplussed whether people have protein shakes or not. Mm. Most are eating twice a day. You may as well enjoy the food.
Yeah, sure.
But when you're, once you're into a lower fat, higher protein plan, and you quite frankly just need to get the food in regularly, the protein shakes can be a godsend.
Mm. And useful for traveling, because you can just take them with you in a flask, mix them up with some milk or some water, yeah, or whatever.
Exactly.
And you've got your high protein.
And it just keeps you through. It keeps you going through. Mm. So it's still low glycemic. It's still aimed around keeping the insulin steady. Not quite as much of a flat line as a high fat, but still low.
And can you rotate between the two? Can you, do you have clients who come in and do a bit of high fat, a bit of low fat? How does that work?
Well, ultimately, the goal with any of these is that you hit the point where you're happy from a shape side of it. And then it really is a case of looking at lifestyle side of it. So my concern with rotating, you absolutely can. 100% can. My concern is the psychological focus it takes to rotate. And when people do too much rotating, they often end up with just one mulch.
Yes.
they tend to blur. The lines get... So some people are brilliant at it, and in which case, yes, 100% you can. Most of our clients don't have really enough time to kind of figure out a new plan again, almost.
Yeah.
So the aim is always to get them ultimately into something that just sort of flows more with their life. They get, mm-hmm, used to it. In the long term, with most clients, we're looking to get more medium fat. So less fat than the high fat, but more fat than what they would have in the low one.
Yeah.
So start getting the fat in and low carb. So again,
it's always the sugars, isn't it? It's, yeah, let's just go low carb.
Keep the breads, the rice, the pasta to once or twice a week at best, and you'll, yeah, be fine. And, yeah, it really is just moving from the carb dependency.
Yes.
They were the cheap food. Which, of course,
well, you know, you talk about the food being designed, and I do sense that there's going to be a bit of a battle coming on, because the food industry is entirely built on a platform of processed carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And I was very aware that when I was on the high fat diet, I was not eating anything, yeah, from the food industry. You know, I was eating plain steak or meat. I was having eggs with avocado, with a handful of walnuts. I was eating lots of nice green veg. I, you know, was having cream and cheese. Nothing was out of a packet. Nothing, yeah, was processed. And there is, you know, they must be clocking this. They must be looking at it going, we need to be putting out some, you know, misinformation here,
yeah,
because our profit warnings are going to be manifold if we don't stop, yeah, this rise of high fat, good fat, low carb, which,
yeah,
is what people like you and so many experts and academics and medics, all sorts, are saying is the way ahead.
Yeah. Sadly, if the money's been made in being able to patent something and box it and sell it, and it's hard to do that with broccoli or a piece of fish or meat.
Yeah, or a boiled egg.
Or a boiled egg.
Yeah.
And I mean, the good news is at the moment, all the natural foods like that are accessible and we can get them at prices that we can actually all afford,
yeah,
to have. Nobody owns it per se, apart from whoever.
No, the price of processed food compared to plain food. I was looking actually at the price of just some plain organic liver. I think it was a supermarket in the north of England, and it was something like £1.50 a kilo. I mean, it was so ridiculously cheap and so incredibly nutritious. And you think, my goodness, you fry that with a little bit of green veg and you've got a massive meal for
one of our supplements is simply just desiccated liver. It is.
Is it really?
Yeah. There is such benefit to liver.
I remember when my mother back in the day did Weight Watchers, bless her. And I mean, this is going back, I don't know, 40 years maybe. But she said the reason she came off it was that they made you have compulsory liver. And she didn't like it.
I believe
it. But it was, you know, they absolutely said they identified it as something that would really help with weight loss.
It's like a superfood. It really is astonishingly beneficial. I say that and I have memories of trying to avoid my mother feeding it to us. And kind of trying to feed the dog under the table with our liver. But it is a superfood. So, yes, it's a bit concerning that,
But it doesn't have to be meat-based, does it? Because I ate a lot of avocados when I was on the high-fat diet.
It can be beautifully fish-based. It can be vegetarian based, but that will tend to mean dairy if you're going high fat.
Right.
But medium fat you can do on any spectrum. You really can. And the key is just keep to natural foods. I mean, this is really just back to very basic natural eating, how we evolved.
Yeah,
if you
cooking
like.
From scratch, going back to basics, really nutrient dense.
Yes. Yes. And it really is understanding one, they may all look alike, but some food actually is just bursting with nutrients.
Yeah.
And others just really aren't.
Well, it's so great to have you here talking about so many positive things. And I can absolutely vouch for what you're doing, having experienced it. And I feel excited because I do genuinely feel that I'm only actually beginning my journey.
Yeah.
You know, and in my 50s, it's really exciting to know that there is such a positive way ahead.
It is, isn't it?
With these simple changes. So thank you.
Well, thank you very
thank
much.
You. Thank you. And I will be writing about it, as I say, in the magazine more at length in the future. And that is sadly all we have time for today. But do head over to lizellewellbeing.com for links to much of what we've been chatting about today, including the links to Zana's truly amazing multi-award winning gyms. Maybe I'll see you in there. I'm sure this is a subject that we will be returning to time and again as we know more about the role of healthy fats, high intensity interval training, and of course, the damaging and negative impact of sugars within the body. Now, if you haven't already, I would love it if you could find time to leave a quick review for this podcast over in iTunes or Stitcher. It really does help others to find us and spread the wellbeing word. So until the next time we chat, go well. Bye-bye.